Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. This evening, we're going to talk a little bit about ISIS, the Islamic State. ISIS is an Islamic extreme rebel group that is controlling territory in Iraq and Syria. And Billy stated the following about ISIS in Contact Report 593. In the eastern Ukraine, there is still no rest with the separatists, as is not in North Iraq with the ISIS gang of felons. The ISIS murderers cause havoc in northern Iraq, murder civilians and believers of other religions on a huge scale, and want to create a God state, whereby also new Islamists from various new Islamic states can get involved. And Ptah states that even Christian believers are being converted to Islam from many countries, thus also from Germany, Switzerland, England, Australia, Italy, Spain, and France, as well as from former East Bloc states. Christian believers are converted to Islam and then fanaticized and radicalized. I've got a couple call-in guests I want to bring on the air. 949.
Hello?
Hello, who's this?
Nate,
I'm glad you're on, sir. I'm sure you've got some stuff to add to our discussion of ISIS. And I've got another caller here, 804. Okay, I'll put 804 back on hold. I'm getting some kind of something going on in the background there, 804. Anyway, Nate, you've done some research on ISIS, haven't you?
Quite a bit.
Good. I'm so glad. Because I still don't feel like an expert on this topic at all.
I don't. I'm mostly looking at the people it's affecting and how it, and how we can, you know, kind of spur our own government to take action that needs to be taken against these gang of felons or murderous thugs. We're looking more at the northern part of Iraq and stuff in the Kurdistan area. And the Kurds are the people actually holding the front line for a lot of this ISIS nonsense. Holding them back, that is.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I heard one film or watched one film on this, and they were saying that at least one researcher believed that when we defeated Iraq in the Iraqi war there, we basically disbanded their army, and they had an army of about 400,000 people, and a lot of those people in the Iraqi army were just dumped back into Iraq, and Iraq's economy is devastated. No one has any work. So it was real natural for these guys to join ISIS. Have you read anything along those lines?
Yeah, there's definitely an extremely simple cause and effect. And I think last week I sent you some information on the prosecution for George W. Bush for murder.
Yeah.
By Vincent Bilagosi. And if anybody listens to this, they should take a look at this guy. He's the guy who put Charles Manson behind bars. And as you know, Charles Manson never killed anybody, but he was the orchestrator behind many killings. So this guy also wrote Luke Helter Skelter and stuff. So this kind of goes into the creation. And it hasn't been translated yet, but one of the recent contact report I think was talking about, there was a 97% chance that ISIS would have never been formed, even though it's alluded to in the Enoch prophecies, if George Bush would not have invaded Iraq. A 97% chance that this group would have never formed.
That's exactly what this one researcher was saying. Something along those lines, basically. Yeah, I think you're right. If we hadn't have invaded Iraq, then probably none of this would have happened.
So, I mean, in times of war, these are when the most radicalized of the citizenry bubble to the top and accumulate great power. The guy who's yelling the most outrageous rants right now, if everything's okay, you just look at him and like, well, this guy's a crazy guy, so once you just put him away or get him out of here. But when you're downtrodden, you're lost and stuff, and you're kind of looking for answers, what this guy starts saying or these groups start saying, it seems, well, I'm feeling bad, and what they're saying is kind of like fueling that fire. So hey, they must be right, or they could be right, or
let me try again to bring on 804. Hello, 804?
Yes, I'm just listening.
Okay, that's fine. Great. Yeah, I wasn't sure who that was. Nate, you're a little bit quieter than normal. Is there anything different? No?
Is it better now?
Yes, that's better.
All right, I just have a habit of holding the phone several centimeters away from my face. Sorry.
Probably a good idea, so it doesn't irradiate your head. Anyway, I have a film here, a clip from actually Fox News. Converter be killed, Iraqi Christians being forced out by ISIS. I thought this was kind of interesting.
Does look like.
All right, now to a very serious and really a tragic topic to talk about on this Sunday. ISIS is on the march in Iraq, and in one city, the threat to Christians has never been greater. In Mosul, the terrorists have given Christians three options: convert to Islam, pay, or die.
So can anything be done to stop this? Joining us now is Father Jonathan Morse to weigh in. Good morning, Father.
Good morning.
What can be done to stop this?
Let's continue to paint the picture first. Imagine this is Mosul, which was where Christianity has been since 1,700 years ago, right? 200 years before even the foundation, the invention of Islam. We also know that it was a place of about 30,000 Christians, Assyrian Christians, Chaldean Christians. Now they have come in. ISIS has come in. They have not destroyed the churches yet. What they've done is they've taken off the crosses. They've smashed the statues. They put a black ISIS flag up, and now they've told everyone, and they've gone house to house, put the Arabic letter for Nazarene, Christian, these are Christians, and saying you're out by 1 o'clock on Saturday, you must be out of here.
Martin,
the whole thing of paying, that wasn't even a possibility. People know that they better get out of there or they're dead.
Well, Iraq at one point, not long ago, had about 1 million Christians in that country, and now it's down to less than half of that. We're looking right now.
So Iraq is down to less than half of the number of Christians that it used to have. I'm going to try to bring 803 on the air. 803?
Hello, Mark.
Hey, Salam. Thanks for calling in. We're just talking about ISIS tonight. I think it's a topic. I think Nate probably has the most expertise, and I'm still kind of new to some of this. I'm trying to put all this together.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to say a couple things if I can.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, I remember, I think it was Silent Revolution of Truth. I think it was a film that Michael Horn did.
Yeah.
That right in the beginning of it, and it, to me it was like the most startling thing, it talked about that if we were to pull out, or we as in the United States, were to pull out all of our troops from overseas and all over the world, that we could basically prevent a world war. And, you know, now we're fast-forwarding to the day where we had a building up of ISIS, and you still have a lot of these, still have a lot of problems with of what took place on 9/11, which we blamed on Al Qaeda, and then we took out the one person that could have stopped a lot of this. This creation of ISIS that we have today.
Are you referring to Saddam Hussein?
Yes, that's correct. Saddam, yeah. I'm talking about what's his name? The one that was the leader of the Taliban, or that's what we. Oh man, it was. I think it was Saddam was the.
Saddam was the leader of Iraq, and I think he was kind of the strong man that was kind of keeping the Middle East under control. It seems like there always has to be kind of a strong man that, otherwise these factions will war endlessly. It just seems like they go back and forth.
Yeah, well, which is kind of interesting because Frosty had made a pretty good point about how the Islam culture works, where it works great with a dictator.
Nate, any thoughts on any of that?
That's Fox for you.
Say that again.
That it works great with a dictator. I think that's Fox being Fox and trying to, evoke emotions and stuff. Any religion that deals with a hierarchical structure is meant to have a dictator. Christian religion subscribes to a godhead, the Hindu religion subscribes to godheads, but still they have these shawarmas and holy men and stuff. It's all hierarchically driven. And so if you look at, I think that statement's true, but I think it's true for pretty much any religion that you look at.
Do you think that some human beings, or maybe all of us to a degree, have a need to have this powerful government structure? I mean, why do we keep allowing tyrannies to come up all over the world?
Well, I kind of have a theory about the whole thing.
Great.
It seems that from what I understand, whenever we're born into certain thoughts that our parents have. Of course, we're also taught these certain things. And sometimes I wonder if, I don't really know how to go about saying all this, but if some of this is kind of started from such a small, from when you're first born, and then it kind of gets out of control because how Billy talks about how we're kind of on the path of destruction or degeneracy.
Right.
And I find that to be very true because not a lot of people are interested in the truth, but fantasy itself, which is, I think, one of the reasons why the entertainment industry is doing so well.
Wow. I think you just hit on something really hard or really important there, is we do seem to gravitate towards fantasy. And, I notice that in myself, especially if I get tired. Wednesday, Thursday comes around, And I find myself, you know, I'm not studying the Meyer material. I'm not doing that much productive. I'm gravitating to kind of watching some old Star Trek stuff on YouTube or something. That's very true. We seem kind of oriented to go to make-believe. I wonder why we find that so fascinating.
I think it's a culture thing, but I have heard that there's this thing called the weird form that Billy talks about that can also be like kind of how we see our culture, where we kind of, for instance, I find it to be very easy to talk about a TV show with somebody over, let's say, you know, nobody wants to discuss politics or religion, and yet we know that there's so many loopholes and broken pieces that really do need to be discussed in order to be fixed. But, you know, I kind of enjoyed a speech that John F. Kennedy made when he said that if we don't correct a problem, or if we don't correct the mistake, it becomes a problem. And I feel like that's very true to a degree of what's going on now.
Any thoughts, Nate?
I mean, the way you make a slave is by telling that person or that human that they are not responsible, and they give away all their power to other things and stuff. I see as that has permeated throughout our culture and our society, you have more of a gravitation towards the fantasy, because when you bring up reality to a lot of people, they go, well, there's nothing you can do about it. There's nothing I can do about it. Or they'll hide in the reality of what they see by saying, well, this is the way they do it. And you're just like saying, I know, but don't you want a different outcome? Don't you want something different? For example, recently, I guess the head of Nestle was talking, and he was basically saying that water is not a right, you know, and I think there's basic things that, you know, especially if we have the technology to provide, it should be a right, you know.
That's a good point. I think that's interesting. But what you said about not wanting to accept the responsibility, I think that's really a profound statement. And I think when it really comes down to religion, I think that's probably what's really going on there. That's why people gravitate to religion, I think. I have another caller. I don't know if they just want to listen, but I'll try to bring them on the air. 505, are you listening, or did you want to participate?
Just listening.
Okay, great. Anyway, yeah. And then you get these...
I'd like to add...
Go ahead, Solon.
I'd like to add to what Nate said. When he was talking about, I'd like to add what he said, but Billy had, there was a question asked to Billy about how to change the world. And Billy says that it's the individuals who are changing the world. And so in that sense, I do think that just being one person, that you really can make a big difference more than we realize. And if you ever look at history, you know, the coarser groups that are known, but the people that we remember are like the people who made such great breakthroughs, like Tesla and Einstein and Mozart and all those people who created this beautiful stuff that today that we're still baffled by.
Right. You know why I think we can make a difference is because thoughts and behaviors are very contagious. So just by, for example, doing this show where we're thinking about things, we're trying to come up with solutions, we're trying to learn about what's going on, those kind of behaviors and thoughts are contagious to people that might listen to this show, and they might want to do their own research and get to understand things better and start maybe to take personal responsibility. What are your thoughts, Nate?
Definitely. Thoughts, for example, you can control animals with your thinking. And a good example of this is when you're younger and you're told about wild dogs or wild animals to not put out fear, because then they'll feel fear, and one of two things usually happens when an animal feels fear. Either they run away or they attack.
Mm-hmm.
So you're actually projecting fear upon that, and so it's now in the state of mind of fear. But yeah, definitely, in those people that are actually focused, intently focused on the positive, on the good and stuff, and know what they're doing. And I'm not saying being blind to what's out there, but know as they enter into a situation, I'm gonna project this, I'm gonna have this about me, and I'm gonna focus on this. Then they are actually making a conscious effort towards change versus the person who kind of wanders into some place and goes, hey, look, I got lucky, or this is just how it is. So then Solon's right when he's talking about, you know, how people's thinking really will, the individual's thinking will change things and can.
I think I was reading in the Might of Thoughts just a few days ago that thousands of people die just from their own thoughts of anxiety and fear. And now think about these terrorist groups that are trying to generate anxiety and fear. So it's a completely unhealthy thing to do for the whole globe.
And those people who aren't paying attention, they're also more susceptible to this type of thinking. And our society itself doesn't really teach people how to, you know, meditate or focus on their thoughts or control their thinking or get rid of the thoughts they don't want. Our society is more along the lines of, hey, let's create an emotion in people and get them addicted to that emotion, so we have a perpetual consumer, you know, of our crappy products.
You know, I also recommend people get outside and just get in nature and just, if for nothing else, to get some negative ions, because we're so around electrical equipment, which is purely positive ions, and it literally throws off the charge of our bodies. We need to be in nature and negative ions. I got a clip here where this researcher, and I won't play all of it, it's only about 2 minutes, but this researcher is talking about how we inadvertently created the Islamic State.
The difficulties it has brought, eager to avenge a relative's death or a personal affront, or simply desperate to earn some easy money by hiring themselves out to attack Americans. When you look at the goals of Al-Qaeda when they attacked the United States on 9/11, what was the goal exactly? First of all, to create this enormous image or kind of recruiting poster for jihadism, the image of the towers falling, the image of the towers attack. But secondly, it was to draw the United States out of its hole, as one of the Al-Qaeda theorists put it. It was to, in their ambition, to drag the United States into a quagmire in Afghanistan. And like the Soviets before them, we are going to defeat the United States on the battlefield in Afghanistan. That was their thought. Well, of course, the U.S. did not occupy Afghanistan right away in the way they expected. They did something much more beneficial to the jihadist cause. They occupied Iraq, and they provided day after day, month after month, telegenic images of American troops abusing Muslims. This was exactly what Al-Qaeda wanted to create. I mean, if you look at the images from Abu Ghraib, they might as well be recruitment posters made on Madison Avenue for the jihadi cause. The first result of that was the insurgency itself. The second result of it is ISIS. Because ISIS, of course, is the child, the descendant of Al-Qaeda in Iraq, or Al-Qaeda in Mesopotamia, or Al-Qaeda of the Two Rivers, whatever name you'd like to use. It is a result of Sunni hatred, dissatisfaction, and vulnerability at the new order in Iraq. That Iraqis loyal to a security-obsessed totalitarian regime of 3 decades would seek to fight the Americans who have overthrown it is not surprising. Nor should it be surprising that jihadis from outside and inside Iraq should seize the opportunity.
Okay, Christians are being converted to Islam and ISIS. They're told to convert or die. We're in a sense created ISIS when we disbanded the Iraqi army. Many of the people in the army of Iraq converted to ISIS, and they have this new leader, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, And he is now seen as more powerful than Al-Qaeda's chief. This guy was born in 1971 and joined the insurgency after the 2000 invasion of Iraq. And he spent time in an American military prison. And this Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi wants to follow in the footsteps of previous caliphs. And he wants to carve his name into history. And the aim of these caliphates is to usher in this time of peace. And I think they think they're going to create this peace because they're going to convert everyone to Islam. And the Pied Piper, as he's called, will be fluting jihadis across the globe and marching them off to war. Nate, can you comment?
There's actually three parts, or three Pied Pipers. This is very interesting that they talk about in the Meyer material. And the precursor to that Pied Piper was the son of George W. Or George Bush, which is the W. Bush. It's funny, the previous two Pied Pipers mentioned in the prophecy were George Bush and his son, and then this al-Baghdadi.
Wow.
Which is interesting. Which is, it's very, it's, I don't know, it's just, it's, well, it's disgusting that it's coming true, but it's interesting at the same time.
It's very interesting. There's a guy, his name is Chip Tatum, and he was a former Special Forces assassin, and he has a radio show on Veterans Today, and he said that George Bush Sr., had to take psychiatric meds all the time because he was really kind of out of his mind a bit. And they, and the people that were in the Special Forces, when George Bush Sr. would start, you know, coming up with these crazy ideas for them, they would know that, gosh, the guy's off of his psychiatric meds again. So, I mean, how corrupt our governments are is just a little astonishing. Solon, do you have any comments?
I actually have a lot of comments.
Okay.
I want to go back to when you were talking about ions, native ions. Actually I made my first post to Billy, and it was a question about what he thought about the ion machines.
Oh yeah.
You're absolutely right about the that we're so much surrounded by the positive. I've actually heard people tell me that they bought these machines, and they would just put it, like, literally right on their lap, and it would just make them feel really happy.
Wow.
So I find that interesting you talked about that. I do want to go into a quick study that I could give you that was going off about people who are raised up around, neglect, violence, abuse. And what it does is it actually shrinks the brain. And you have to wonder when you're, you know, these military people that are coming up in ISIS, I imagine that they had this type of problem. And it seems that creation, or I would say nature, has its way of getting rid of such degeneracy by creating such a thing. And they actually go on and talk about how hard it is to correct such a thing.
That is fascinating. Can you tell us any more about that? That was really interesting.
It was the video itself was all about child abuse, and they talk about most of it was about kids, and they talk about if the kids aren't giving enough attention. They did a study. I think it was either the French did it on some Ukraine babies or I think it was the French, because they're actually being sued for this. That they went in there, they gave the kids what they needed to eat and drink, but they gave them absolutely no attention, which was basically looking in their eyes, just acknowledging them. And they said within, I think, 2 weeks that all babies died.
They died?
They all died, which one of the reasons why there's a lawsuit now.
Oh, that's horrible.
But this just shows us that that how important our environment around us just is, and as well as our social interaction, which was taught to me, and I remember in ninth grade, about how important it is to be social, as well as not just being social like what we're doing, but eye contact. which is something that so many of us have problems with in general.
That is so interesting. You know, I even think of my pets and the importance of showing affection to your animals. And, you know, I rescued these two cats this year from the worst part of the cold in the winter. Just, you know, lots of snow on the ground, extremely cold, freezing wind. And these cats were practically kittens. Can you imagine being only 9 months old, not even a year old, and you're stuck out here in the most horrible environment? You know, you're freezing to death, you have nothing to eat, and no affection, no, you know, it's just a horrific thing. And I think we really do need to be more responsible, you know, towards people, towards the environment, towards animals. I'm going to take a little break, folks, just for like a minute or two, play a little relaxing music, and chill out a little bit, and then we're going to get back on this topic. Welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I want to also apologize for some of my MP3s there. I'm going to have to re-upload them. I'm not sure really why they're distorted like that. We're talking about the Billy Meier case today. If you're not familiar with it, Edward Albert Meier is a farmer from Switzerland. He's in his late 70s now. He's written 39 books and over 600 booklets. That really, the booklets, the contact notes, are transcripts of his contacts with extraterrestrial humans going back to about 1945. And he's, over the years, taken this wisdom that he's gotten and put it in various books. And we have these shows and we talk about all these principles that we've learned from this. If you want to learn more about the Billy Meier case, go to the Future of Mankind site. So Google and find the Future of Mankind site. Also, the theyfly.com, Exopolitics, Ohio.us. If you Google Ohio Exopolitics, you'll find the website for this radio show. And it has a lot of information about the Meier case, and we're talking about ISIS and how that is a true threat, probably something the U.S. inadvertently created themselves. We were talking about this Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, who is this person who claims to be a political and religious successor, I guess, to the Prophet Muhammad, to a certain degree. and he wants to form this Islamic government, and I probably over the whole world. I think that's ultimately their goal. Nate, do you have any information on this Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the guy that's the head of ISIS?
From the when they were releasing him, they said he was a minimal threat. So it shows that just any nobody can become somebody. So if you put your mind to it, you know. But anyways, I actually have found the Henoch prophecies, or the prophecy part of the Henoch that talks about this. I'd like to read it, if that's okay.
Go ahead.
All right, so here we go. The reader's question basically states that in Oracle, the Pied Piper by Marianne Uchlinger, it is quite clearly confirmed by Billy that this designation refers to the confused al-Baghdadi, whom you're just speaking about. Contrary to this, in Contact Report 251 in Block 7 of the Pleiadian-Pleioran Contact Reports, in the corresponding sentence, the name George W. Bush is mentioned within bracket. How is this Pied Piper to be understood? And Billy answers this question. This is a prediction of the this is a prediction of the prophet Enoch, which reads as follows: Foreseeing, I have seen the bad things that will happen in the new time in the third millennium in Mesopotamia, and the baleful things that will happen in the whole world. There will be three fallible ones wielding might who will, in the new time after the second turn of the millennium, the first time, 2003, with the second Gulf War, gather a great many people around them and will be called Pied Pipers. The first of these Pied Pipers will be a high one of a large country beyond the Great Water by the name Shrub Knight. So George W. Bush, I guess that's what they call a Shrub Knight. Interesting. Who will ship his army over the great waters and force down Mesopotamia, Iraq, through acts of war and Gewalt-based wise. It will be him who will be responsible for the fact that two more Pied Pipers are able to build themselves up and to spread over the world with malicious Gewalt and with death and destruction. Also, the second Pied Piper will gather many people around him and be a great threat for the whole world, and he will be regarded as the first world enemy, Osama bin Laden, who will bring, with the help of a former highest one of the Shrub Knight, a lot of murders, oppressive and destroying terribleness into the land beyond the great water, September 11, 2001, and into the whole world. Also, the third Pied Piper will gather many people around many people who are perverted in an erroneous belief, naming himself after a place, Baghdad, Baghdadi, and bring a lot of misery, threat, gewalt, affliction, death, terribleness, and coercion all over Mesopotamia and the whole world.
Nate, was that contact 215?
It's mentioned 251.
251, yes, of course. And wasn't that from 1995?
That's got to be sometime back then. I don't have it in front of me, but
yeah, I think it was 1995. I mean, it's amazing that Billy predicted this by name, the guy.
Yeah, and what's really sucks is, I don't know if it sucks, but for those of us who are on the in crowd here, who have self-indoctrinated themselves through his information, you come to the realization that, you know, it must really suck to be Billy at certain levels, because he knows even more than he's even allowed to say. And maybe we get 10% of what he really knows. Because I'm sure you've had the privilege of reading through some of his stuff and then they mention something and then they say, hey, we can't go into that. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Lon, any thoughts?
I was just interested about the whole shrub night. I kind of find it interesting how they tell you without telling you, and I guess in the shrub meaning bush, and then the knight meaning like some type of commander.
I think George is another name for knight.
Oh.
Okay.
George is another name.
George.
For, George is another name for knight. Yeah.
The shrub bush it is. Okay. Mm. I was just curious about that. Breaking that down.
Thanks for reading that, Nate. Contact 251 is incredibly long. I'm definitely going to have to look at that again. So there was actually three Pied Pipers, two of which were the Bushes, and the third is this Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi.
No, I was mistaken when I first mentioned that. For some reason, I was thinking his father was part of that, but actually it's just the son, and then it was Osama bin Laden, and then it's al-Baghdadi. But what's really interesting... Oh, go ahead.
Bush Jr., Osama bin Laden, and Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. Is that correct?
Yeah. So what was interesting about this is when I remember when George W. Bush was going up for election, and I had all these like idiot people around me going, "Oh, I really want him." I'm going, "What's wrong with you?"
Hey, I'll show you how far I've come. I voted for the guy twice.
Okay, good.
Well, I think he won through the Electoral College, though, right? I don't think he won the popularity of second term.
I don't think he won either. The Supreme Court gave it to him. One of the justices there go, "Oh, yeah, you can stop counting now."
Yeah, because I remember we had the recount in Florida, and I don't know if we had that same thing in the first term of his.
Crazy, man, just crazy. Hey, I got another clip here on ISIS and the Iraqi caliphate. I'll just play a little of it, probably not a whole lot.
In the name of Allah, and supported by the Quran, chant the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. In a one-hour documentary, ISIS explain their world. It is a world of horror, and one that they display brazenly. The professional video starts in Fallujah, only 50 kilometers away from the gates of Baghdad. Here, where 10 years ago America fought a bloody battle, masked men with black flags now dominate the streets. When these fighters attack, they don't take prisoners. This assault on an Iraqi military base is documented by their cameras, showing their atrocities in detail. The ISIS video grants anonymity to the offenders, but exhibits victims without mercy. The ISIS offensive troubles this Iraqi family. They have lived in quiet Switzerland since 1996. Today, close relatives back in Iraq are in great danger.
Eine Verwandte von mir hat mir gesagt, also ich habe ihn gefragt, ob er immer noch lebt. Er hat gesagt, warten auf den Tod ist schlimmer als Tod selber. Das machen sie jetzt.
In a town of the Anbar province, ISIS call former soldiers of the Iraqi army to a mosque.
Anyway, these were some Muslim people in Switzerland that had family back in Iraq. This clip may be a year or two old, but I just thought it was kind of interesting and kind of a good introduction and overview of, you know, how this is affecting people all over the world. What are your thoughts, Nate?
I think we should back Kurdistan, and I think that their ideals align mostly with our ideals, and I think we should also back Iran, and I don't know why we're not. I don't know why this immense hatred for Iran has even come through the U.S., except for that it's been a propagandic play by the elitists of the United States to kind of force this down upon us, you know. We installed I forgot the name of the guy, but we installed a dictator in Iran, and the students got really pissed about it. And there's a good example of us meddling in someone else's affairs. And who came up from that atrocity, the Ayatollah Khomeini, which he was very, very religious. You know, and he was also a crazy nut. So, you know.
Yeah, the Shah of Iran.
Yeah, the
right?
Shah, that was the king, right?
Yeah, and then Ayatollah Khomeini replaced him, right?
Mm-hmm. You know, and he, I guess he flew off to England or some other place to live happily ever after, you know, after he murdered a lot of people or had a lot of people put to death. But what was interesting about that is before our meddling, they were westernizing. Iran was westernizing, coming into the ideals, women's rights, and good things like that. And what did we do? We kind of pushed them off. We kind of disrupted their growth so that there became an extreme backlash. So where women had to start wearing burqas again and I don't know the name of the other thing that they wear, but full clothing.
Oh, yeah. And Ayatollah abused, his henchmen abused a lot of women, murdered women.
Yep.
Horrible, horrible stuff was done. Yeah, I read about that. That is covered to a degree in Contact 215. So, Lon, what do you think of this stuff?
Well, from what I understand, we're still holding Iran accountable for stuff he used to do in the past, from my understanding of one of the aggression we had towards him. But, you know, what I find very interesting is that if we're supposed to be setting an example, why are we telling somebody who is trying to, you know, supply energy the same way we supply them and tell them that they can't do such a thing?
Right.
I find it to be kind of insane.
Oh, yeah, I agree. And I personally do not believe Iran is going to nuke anybody, but that's just my opinion. I think they're smart enough to know if they nuke anybody, it's going to lead to their own demise.
Speaking of Iran, the Hanukkah prophecies talks about that if things keep on going south, that it won't be U.S. that will be taking out Iran. It will be Russia.
Russia? Wow. Now, that is strange. Did it elaborate at all on why?
It basically alludes to two confrontations. And here's how I'm putting it together. Now, this is just my opinion of what's going to happen. But if ISIS is successful in what they're going to do or what they're doing, what will happen is they will be successful in one way or another. First way, they will either continuously drain the U.S. resources, but will throw U.S. into two civil wars. This is going to be caused by ISIS launching attacks within the U.S. From sleeper cells or convertees or whatnot or the like, right? Though there's not going to be a huge amount of destruction from those attacks, they will be stepped up because the populace will demand protection and demand this. And as they demand it, their rights will be stripped away, which will cause a conflict here in the U.S. Of the already polarizing wings that you know, of the U.S. right now. So if that happens, then I think the first aggression of Russia towards the resources in the north and their subsequent invasion of Alaska, certain parts of Alaska, will be met with you know, devastating consequences. But shortly after that, these civil wars will break out and basically rendering the U.S. incapable of doing anything. At that time, the Russians will go on their expansion mentality and take over much of that area in there. So that's how I'm putting it together, but I don't know. So don't quote Billy or anybody else. That's just my stuff.
It's interesting. I've never heard anyone say that. So the Meyer material has a prediction, a prophecy about these potential two civil wars in the United States. And you think those are related in some way to ISIS?
Yeah, definitely.
Can you elaborate on that at all?
just that the cause and effect of this ISIS being able to disrupt the normal way of life. I mean, imagine going everywhere you go, there's surveillance, and then on top of that surveillance, there's military checkpoints. Because we already talked about the militarization of the police forces here in the U.S. Well, that's just a hop, skip, and away from a disrupting of the U.S. you know, way of life. And then you have people that are hardcore patriots and people who think in the terms of, hey, you know what, why am I being punished? I haven't done anything wrong. And, you know, these ISIS jerks are the one, you know, I'm not one of them. And, but yet you're treating me like I'm one of them. Et cetera. And that mindset and that mentality, and then the people going, well, you asked for my protection, so I need to take away your freedoms in order to give you protection. You have that whole cycle going on there. So that's how
I'd like to add to your theory. It seems that we're just bringing in Muslims by the shipload, from my understanding, and we're passing Sharia law in certain states, which oppress women and whatnot. That's, you know, very degenerate, and I could see the same thing kind of emerging with your theory.
Absolutely.
No, that's,
I mean, you can see it in France. I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's interesting that you brought up Sharia law, because I know the Islamic prophet Muhammad had sayings and actions that were recorded in something called hadiths, and the hadiths were evaluated and gathered into these large collections in the 8th and 9th century. So the hadiths actually are kind of prophetic material, and it was used in forming the basis of this Sharia law. Now, this Sharia law deals with crime, politics, personal matters such as sexual intercourse, hygiene, diet, all sorts of stuff. And Sharia law also involves physical punishments such as flogging and stoning. The introduction of Sharia law is a goal for the Islamic movements globally, including Western countries. They want to. Are you saying there's some Sharia law in the United States now?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, from what I understand, I think Texas is passing it. And I could be mistaken on this, but I do believe that Montana passed it as well. But I'd have to do a little bit more research. I know that it's being passed, and it's coming up in each state. And it seems that, you know, not a lot of people know anything about it. So it could easily be passed in the name of religious freedoms.
That's incredible. And Frosty Wooldridge, a fellow I had on my Revolution Radio show, a population expert, said that in parts of Detroit, the police won't even go in there because there's so many Muslim people. And in parts of Detroit, they are functioning under Sharia law, but it's being enforced by the Muslims that are there. Now, is this true? It could be. I don't know for sure. Have you guys heard about that?
I haven't heard anything regarding that. Most of the Muslims I know that I live by, they don't subscribe anything near the Sharia law. They said it's just nonsense. I do know what the... putting things, certain cause and effect actions together, that the United States would have never existed if it had not been for the Prophet Muhammad. And the way I think about that is you can see what happened. I mean, some of your prior shows, you were talking about the rise of Christianity, basically,
mm-hmm.
under Constantine. And the destruction of catheters and different things like that. Well, if Christianity was going to have its way, it was going to find its way all the way down and conquer through, you know, bloody force through Africa down into India. Remember, according to your information, you were talking about the name of Jesus Christ. You know, came from Jesus Krishna.
Yeah.
So if if the Prophet Muhammad didn't appear at that time, the world would have been thrown back another 1,000 years into darkness, if you will.
Really?
If Christianity would have taken over, yes.
Now, that is mentioned in some of the contact notes. I remember Larry Driscoll talking about that. Do you remember what specific numbers that's mentioned in?
What I have, actually, I had one of the booklets I had ordered from them that I had read certain parts of, you know, how he started talking about the character of Muhammad and how he had to be very quick with the tongue and beyond the normal guy there, and to use certain old proverbs and different rhetorics to control these people these desert nomads, because they had some really screwed up traditions. One tradition, for example, would have been, you know, if you were of a noble house and you were having an offspring, your first offspring, if it was a girl, you were to take the mother right after she gave birth, was take that baby and go bury it in the desert alive.
Oh, horrible.
Yeah, so if you're of a higher evolutionary state and stuff, and or, you know, you don't subscribe to, imagine the torture, you know, that Muhammad must have gone through just to be privy to some of this stuff. And he's like, no, but he can't speak out because, you know, oftentimes he has to, you know, abide by the greater good or go for the greater good. And the greater good at this time was to stop the spread of Christianity, which ironically was caused in part by one of his previous personalities, according to the Maya material. So, okay.
Wow. Yeah, this stuff is just wild. It always makes my head spin around. Solon, did you want to get the last word this evening?
No, he's done a good job. I'm just going to leave it with that. Thank you so much.
Well, I think both of you guys, Solon and Nate, for joining us this evening here on Ohio Exopolitics. Interesting discussion.
Thanks, Solon. Thanks, Mark.
All right, guys.
Thanks.
Have a good evening. Talk to you later.
Night.
Bye-bye.